but that worked out.
I remember hearing the name Paul Collins.
Yes. Paul was hired. He flew the line after me, and we were flying a DH force, and they had their limitations. They really they weren't designed to do what we were doing. So someone came up with an idea. If one engine is good, two engines are better.
Absolutely.
So they took a DH-4 and they put this bulbous nose on it, and they put two Liberties in this bracing between the wings, and now we had a twin-engine DH-4. I mean, if you got it over 1,500 feet, you were lucky. So we all hated these things, and one by one they went away. So the first day on the job, Paul was sent out, and one of them, he was talking to the mechanics. He was trying to get to know people, and the mechanic said, "Hey, Paul, that airplane over there, can you do me a favor? We're evaluating it. Go tell me what you think of that airplane. Go up and fly it." Like I said, we hated this thing. Paul didn't know any better. He hopped in, they fired it up, and he went up and he looped it and he rolled it and he spun it and he came down and he said, "It's a great flying airplane. And the mechanics were mad. He says, "Why are you mad at me?" He says, "Well, we thought since you were the new pilot, you'd wreck it for us and we could get rid of it."
Didn't have to fly it anymore.
Didn't have to fly it anymore, but he didn't. He was a great, great pilot.
Another name that comes to my mind that's an unusual name is Farr Nutter.
Farr. Farr's still flying the line. And Farr was a Army trained pilot. I didn't know him at the time. He had come a little bit after me. But when the war ended, we all got out of the Army. And Farr lived in Cleveland. And he thought, maybe being an airmail pilot would be all right. But they weren't hiring at the time. So he went back to Cleveland and did his old job. But, he wanted to hang out at the airmail field. So he'd go hang out and talk to the airmail pilots. And one day, the flight was supposed to go from Cleveland to Chicago. And the mail pilot didn't make it in. He was supposed to take it. So Farr says, I'll fly it. And the station manager said, you say you're an Army-trained pilot. Do you have a logbook? He said, no. He says, you don't even have a helmet and goggles. How do I know you're a pilot? He says, I can fly this thing. The guy said, get out of here. You're not going to fly it. Well, the mail had to leave by 1 o'clock to make it to Chicago on time. And Prager was really putting a lot of heat on us for this 100% completion. No one that month had canceled a flight. So this Uh-oh. Poor station manager, he was sweating. So about 1:30, he says to Farr, "You sure you can fly this thing?" Farr says, "Yeah, I can fly this thing." He says, "Tell you what," he says, "get in there and take it around the patch and come back in and land." And he says, "If you can do that, I'm good. You can take it to Chicago."
You can go.
Well, Farr got in the DH-4, and he took off, and he looked down at the field. Now, he had trained like I did in Texas, where there's just wide open fields. I mean, you can land anywhere. Yeah. And he looked down at the field there in Cleveland, and he thought, "I'm not sure I can land
too
there."
Too small.
But he happened to notice he had a full tank of gas, a full radiator, and the mail was in the front.
He had the mail on board then already.
So he fished around, and he found a map. And he headed to Chicago, so I can only imagine what the station manager was thinking. Now, he had never been to Chicago before, but he figured, okay, if I take a heading, I'll see, Toledo, find the lake and take a westerly heading.
Sooner or later, find a big lake.
He did. So he landed in Chicago, and the station manager came out to meet him, and he was holding a telegram, and he said, "Mr. Nutter, the station manager in Cleveland said, if you make it, I'm supposed to give this to you." So Farr opened up the paper and it said, "Congratulations, you're an airmail pilot.
You're hired.
If you want it."
That's great.
Yes.
That's great.
Yes.
Well, the last question, Brian, that I have for you is, you're now flying the Curtiss Condor.
Yes.
It's got to be quite a contrast to the DH-4s and the other airplanes that you've been flying.
Tell me just a little bit about flying. It can't get any better than the Condor. I mean, we have two engines that are powerful. When it snows, we don't get snow on the eyebrows.
Yeah,
when it rains, we don't get wet. I haven't flown it like Dick Merrill did in shorts yet. But and the nice thing is we have heat. The passengers have heat. It's enclosed. And the best part about it all is we can fly in the clouds now. And that's wonderful. The Sperry Company invented a gyroscopic instrument for us.
Really?
Yeah,
really?
And it holds rigidity in space. And you have a needle, and it'll tell you if you're turning
if
left
you're
or right.
Really?
It's wonderful. So
that's amazing.
You do the same method, but
technology.
It's great. It can't get any better than that.
Isn't that the truth?
And we're faster
than
the DH-4s.
Can't imagine it getting any better than that.
No, it's a great way to travel, and All of you come out and fly Eastern Air Transport. We need the money.
Now, the Curtis Condor, I think Eastern is the only carrier that has the Curtis Condor,
aren't
they?
We got
the Curtis. What do you have, about 15, 20 of them?
We have 12. We have 12.
And Glenn Curtis is quite a man, wasn't he? I'm telling you, he came up with some really interesting airplanes.
If it weren't for him, we wouldn't have the Jenny, which was really a lovely airplane.
That's absolutely right.
Our early airmail Jennies, story about that is when they started flying the mail, they did it kind of quickly, and they needed planes to do this, and really all we had were the Jennies, and quite frankly, the Jennies that we had were OX5 powered, mm-hmm. 90 horsepower, mm-hmm. at 21 gallons of fuel. So number one,
not much fuel.
We couldn't get very high, and we couldn't fly very long, so they couldn't make it between Philadelphia and New York with any sort of regularity, or even D.C. to Philadelphia at that time. Commander Fleet, who was in charge of setting up the mail, went to Curtis and said, "Hey, you know, we bought 6,000 of these Jennies from me. Can you do me a favor?" He says, I got a week to put this airmail system together. I need Jennies, and I want you to put two fuel tanks in, and I want you to yank that old OX5 out and put a Hisso in." They did it in
so
7 days.
The Hisso is what, 180 horsepower?
Initially, they were 150 horsepower, and that's what we had at the mail. Nice thing is they had two magnetos, whereas the OX5 only had one.
More technology. You know what I'm telling
you? I thought it couldn't get any better.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Well, Brian, it's been a real pleasure to talk with you this evening.
Glad
really
to be
have.
Here.
We've learned a lot about flying and all the technology that's happened in the last few years here.
Sure.
And we're almost at the peak of aviation right now.
I'll tell you, when I'm in that Condor,
it just
doesn't get any better.
Absolutely. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you.
You're out there. Hello. My name is Paul Glenshaw, and thank you for all for being here. I hope you stick around. We've got a short film to show you. It's just shy of an hour. Has anybody here seen or heard of the film Barnstorming? All right. That's good to know. It's got a special place for us here at Oshkosh because we premiered it here 2 years ago. For those of you who haven't seen it, I'm not really going to say much about it to start the film. I'm one of the producers of it, one of the writers of the movie. What you're going to see was shot in 7 days, but over 3 years. And at the end of the film, I'll explain a little bit more about... I'll be happy to take your questions and tell you a little bit more about what we saw. I will say two other things. One is that... this is a very special screening of the film, and you'll see why in the middle of the film. But all I'll say is our composer, the composer who wrote the music and performed the music for the film, is here. So that's a hint. And the other is that a few of the pilots who are in the film are here. We're very fortunate to have them with us, especially Andrew King, who is here with a 1911 Curtis Pusher, and they just made it. They just got here. So we're delighted to have Andrew here to be with us tonight. So without further ado, please enjoy the film. And what I always say before screening of this movie is that what you're going to see is all real. We didn't make any of it up. There's no way we could have. We're just not that bright. And what we saw, we never even had an intention of making a film. We just heard about something, it sounded interesting, but what we saw was far beyond anything we could have imagined. And so we were very fortunate and privileged to be able to witness and capture what you'll see tonight. And we hope very much that you'll enjoy it. Like I said, the film is about 50 minutes long, that's 50. And we'll be happy to take some questions at the end and hope you'll stick around. We've got a few announcements at the end as well about what else we'll be doing here at Air Adventure this year. We've got a lot going on, including another film and some other performances to tell you about. So stick around, enjoy the film, and we'll be back a little bit later on. Thanks very much.